Once again, it's time for the program that emanates to you from two separate corners of Gitmo Nation. It's Sunday afternoon. It's time once again for No Agenda in the United Kingdom. I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak here in northern Silicon Valley, a place that doesn't exist, also known as Gitmo Nation West.
Yes, I'm Gitmo Nation East, you're Gitmo Nation West, which is our new mantra.
Yeah, and it makes nothing but sense. In fact, all my Twitter followers have all agreed it's not a bad term and probably apropos.
Right. This is the word that we've been looking for the fascist state. Instead of using fascism, we're just going to use Gitmo Nation.
Yeah. Mm. Or nouveau fascism or
no, Gitmo
state-ism.
Nation. It's Gitmo Nation. Let's keep it at that. I love it.
Anyway, so what's going on? You came into the U.S. and then you left again.
Yes.
That means you get to give us another one of your fabulous tales from the TSA.
Yes, I do. So
we need a bumper for that.
Yeah, like a jingle?
Yeah.
Okay, folks out there. Oh, wait, actually, before I tell you that, listen to this. This is kind of funny.
Hey, John. Hey, Adam. This is Mark up here in the creek, and just got finished listening to episode 42 of No Agenda, and I just loved it. They're getting better and better. Every time I think it can't get any better, something happens. And in this case, along comes conspiracy theory Adam. But now we have the prospect of listening to Dvorak playing Scully to Adam's Mulder. And it's just tremendously funny. The last episode cracked me up. So keep up the good work, guys. And remember, John, even the reptilians, they work for us.
How much do you love that?
Yeah, unfortunately, the people out there don't realize how close that is to reality.
It is completely true. Coming into the States, this was a week ago on Sunday. Yeah, because I'm now back in the UK. I just got in a couple hours ago. Coming in, hand off the passport. I'd said on the Daily Source Code, maybe I should disable my RFID chip and see what happens. And people strongly advised against that.
Why?
Because it's a crime.
Oh.
You're not allowed to destroy any part of your passport. Although I do know how to do it. I do know the best ways, obviously. Anyway, so I didn't do that. So up, it went into the RFID scanner. Bloop, the screen comes up. I look at the agent, female agent, and she's tapping away. And I said, you know, you might just want to call the team leader, or shall I just go straight? Now I got an attitude, right? Shall I just go straight on to secondary? I know where the little room is. Hold on a second. I can't actually do this from here, is what she said. So she picks up the phone, calls, another agent comes over, male agent, and they're both looking at the screen, and they mark an M on my landing card, and I said, do I have to go to secondary? No, you can just go through to the regular secondary, which would normally be my tertiary screening. So that was...
So the process is there's actually two secondaries, and one of them you were going through two different secondaries before, and now you only had to go to one?
Yeah, well, when you enter the United States, you always go through customs, then you pick up your bag, and then you have to actually leave, and that's really the checkpoint, right? That's where they have all those counters, and they pick people out, and they go through their bags and see if they have dairy products or other contraband. So that's normally... kind of a secondary for everybody. That's really where the, you know, whatever at that point has been marked on your landing card, if there's any action that needs to be taken appropriately, or they can just fish you out, right?
Okay.
But there is an actual secondary, which is a little room all the way off to the left in the corner, which is kind of like a waiting room at the, at your high school infirmary. You know what I mean? Where you got like...
Yeah, the nurse.
Yeah, the nurse, kind of like folding chairs, and there's a little square there, and a couple agents sit there, and they're going through shit, and you just sit there, and you feel like a horrible person. So I didn't have to go through that. But of course, I had a marking on my landing card, so I showed it to the agent, and the agent picked up the little blue pouch. I know the whole drill, and I walked straight on, And this agent was really nice, you know, and he's like, yeah, well, and John, you know, they know me by now. They know the story. They know me. And, so I just ask him, I'm just asking him shit, you know, point blank. I'm saying, what's the M for? Is that for like money? Isn't my favorite. No. I said, well, what is it? Master? You know, I said, oh, no, it stands for match. Ah, okay. This is the Adam Curry from Nebraska I've been hearing about. And now he's smiling, right? Because he's looking at the terminal. He says, yeah. And so he's actually letting a little bit more through than I think he probably should. Yeah. And I said, well, look, you know, can't you guys, like, just take me off the list? He says, well, here's the problem. The problem is this other Adam Curry is on the watch, you know, on our list to, you know, if he tries to enter through this port. And I guess he's, I don't know if he's in Nebraska or not. So if we take all Adam Curry's off, then we'll never, you know, have a match. But yeah, you know, it's a different birth date. You know, apparently their systems just aren't sophisticated enough, or they don't want to take any risk that there could be a different birth date used and some kind of, you know, like the evil Adam could kill me and then use my passport.
The evil Adam.
So I said, well, you know, why don't you just arrest this guy already? We know he's in Nebraska. You know, we know he has my name. We know that he's younger than I am. Arrest the guy already. And he's like, well, you know, the agency that's interested in him, doesn't actually want to arrest him. So they're watching him. They want to see what he does. And he says, yeah, something like that. So there you go.
Well, I guess that's never going to end then.
Not until they grab this guy. And what the hell is he doing?
He's probably not doing anything. Yeah. We should start. Why don't we do?
Let's just find him. Let's find him
and find out who he is.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just some schmuck.
Well, I heard that he was driving a red pickup truck in Nebraska. That was the latest report I had. But I agree. I think we should crank this up a little bit because it's just too interesting. Let's find out what he's done.
I mean, are they going to let this guy float around forever? I mean, if they're interested in him, how many years is this going to go on before they either pick him up or what are they waiting for him to do? Punch somebody? No. I mean, I'm not getting this.
I don't know. Well, they're clearly waiting for him to commit some kind of felony. They're snooping on him, I guess.
What did he do before that he'd be on this list in the first place?
Well,
is he a protester? Is he like a guy in the World's Workers Party?
I don't know. I really
my curiosity is getting the best of me on this one.
All right, we need our audience to help us with that one. If you're in Nebraska, look for this guy.
Now, are we sure he was in Nebraska or was it North Dakota?
No, I'm pretty sure it was Nebraska.
Who in Nebraska is going to be? Whatever.
It does, of course, uncover an inherent flaw in the system. You know, so, and Adam Curry is not a very common name, although there's a well-known basketball player named Adam Curry. There was some 17-year-old kid who died of leukemia recently named Adam Curry. I know that because, you know, that shit shows up in my personal ego filter. But, you know, almost any name you can think of, you know, is going to have a whole bunch of people who have the same name. And that just inherently exposes the whole problem. It's like, you know, okay, they can't take the one name off because, you know, they're not matching on anything else but the name, first name, last name.
Yeah, so that means the guy, if he wants to sneak out of the country, all he has to do is get, you know, go down to Los Angeles, get a phony passport where they sell them on the streets, change his name to Fred Schmuck, and then walk through customs.
Yeah.
Or he can just walk across the border in Canada or whatever with his driver's license. I don't know.
Yeah, speaking of Canada, do you know that we signed an agreement with Canada, a military agreement?
What does it say?
I'm going to look at this right now. This was in the Times over here. Shit, that's not it. Let me just find it. Well, where the hell is it now? I'd done all this prep work. There you go. It shows me right for trying to prep something. No, apparently in February, some kind of agreement was signed between the U.S. and Canada. That should we have any, you know, any problems, that we'll help each other out, kind of like a NATO type deal, I guess. That our armed forces would then fight with each other. They're calling it.
Maybe that's just for military. You know, if they have martial law.
Only if that happens, and we need some extra troops. Exactly. I just thought it was interesting. You didn't hear about that anywhere.
We don't hear about anything, let's face it. In fact, it took a while before the that Russia... By the way, we were remiss last week not to discuss the Georgia...
Yeah, that was really dumb. That was really stupid of us not to miss that. You know, actually, you want to talk about that? You want to talk about that now, or you want to talk about Clinton? Because Clinton's kind of high on my list.
Let's talk about the other thing first, because the Clinton thing is, you know...
Okay.
That's too nutty to start to show off with. We'll lose too many people.
All right. So I guess when we're talking about Georgia, and I have found a couple really cool other cool things to look at and to read.
I've been listening to the right-wing talk radio shows, and it started off as, you know, Russia's the bad guy, Russia's the bad guy. That's the litany. That's what the talking points are. You know, they came in, they're trying to assert themselves, they're trying to, you know, make sure that none of these countries that used to be allied with them or part of the Soviet Union are going to join NATO, and this is all blaming Russia. And then I noticed that about halfway through the week, the tone was softened as if we're going to start to change our tune officially. And of course, if you follow it, it seems, in fact, I had a really good post on the blog. You have to go back a ways, but it's called the look up, search for reader challenge. And there's a bunch of people that chimed in about the timeline, about what really happened here. And it's really Georgia, that is the aggressor trying to shut down the, Ossetians in that whole area. Because they wanted to become their own country. Now, what? Anyway, so well, you've gone back and forth.
That's not entirely true. I mean, they're already their own country, but
officially they're part of Georgia.
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean Ossetia? Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you were saying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, they were just given a lot of the Ossetians were given Russian passports in the past month or so.
Yeah, well, here's the story I got from a friend. My daughter's friend is a Russian, and her mom's a Georgian.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over there, and I decided to you know,
do some interrogation.
I asked her. I interrogated her. Here's what she said.
By the way, that Russian passport thing
that they've been getting. Somebody's got to do it.
Exactly.
So that Russian passport thing for a couple of weeks or whatever it says, bogus. They've had Russian passports for 2 years.
Okay, good.
Or longer. And she gave me the rundown on this. She says that the whole Georgian border thing was set up by Stalin originally. She takes the whole story back to the 40s.
Wow, okay.
And she says this one group, this was never felt that they're part of Georgia. They were always felt more connected to Russia. And somewhere along the line, they made a lot of noise about being either independent or joining Russia and having the borders wrap around them rather than being in Georgia. And this is that area, the Ossetia. And there's actually two. There's not just Ossetia. There's another one that I can't barely pronounce, which is the one she kept referring to. And she said the Russians long ago decided that they will support this breakoff group, the splinter group or whatever they want to call it. They did give them passports. They all have Russian passports. Most of them speak Russian. And they said that Russia said they would support them if they want to become part of Russia or if they want to become their own standalone country. But there's some indication that Russia might not support them being fully incorporated into Georgia. Now, the couple of things that came out, one of them is the oil runs through that area. But she mentioned something that's never been brought up in the press, which is this one area, and the reason the Russians like or want the area to be part, or they want to be tight with them, it's the number, it essentially produces all the citrus fruits for everybody.
The citrus fruits, you said?
Yeah, the oranges and lemons and everything that's got vitamin C in it comes from this area. And I guess it feeds the whole of Russia and every place else. It's like this huge, it's the, you know, Florida of the ex-Soviet Union. So I never heard that before. And there's also that, you know, port, which the Russians want to get a hold of. And she said that there's a couple of things. One is that the president of Georgia has this spiel that he gives about how they've ended all corruption.
Yeah.
She knows lots of people that would say that's bogus. It's just a public relations stunt. There's plenty of corruption.
Well, Saakashvili is also, you know, credited and credits himself with bringing, new economic growth and wealth, which, of course, is all fed in by the U.S.
Right. It's our money.
Yeah.
So anyway, you talked about this during the week, which is that in Holland, they follow the Saakashvili guy closely, and you might want to explain why.
Because he is married to Sandra Roelofs, who is a Dutch girl. And it goes a little bit further. An RTL News cameraman was killed, a Dutch cameraman was killed during one of the shellings. And so, you know, that's been kind of the front, you know, the front pages of the news, of course. And the Sandra Roelofs has announced that she's going to be attending his funeral and wake, from what I've read, the family has responded to with mixed feelings. Hell yeah. I mean, what a political move, regardless of whether she's Dutch or whether she cares.
Apparently this guy was killed by the Georgian shelling.
That I don't know.
Well, there seems to be a lot of evidence that most of the people killed in that area were killed by Georgians, not by Russians. But anyway, they followed this guy very carefully in Holland. And so then you pointed out to me some of the stories running over there that nobody in the other Western media is picking up. Especially the part of this guy being some sort of a sex weirdo.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So the first one, actually, I'm going to Skype you a link right now, which you have to watch. You can just turn the sound off. It's from the BBC. I just want you to watch for two things. This is Saakashvili, and he's, you know, there's a little bit of, actually, some good combat footage, which I haven't seen anywhere in this. You see actual, you know, like rockets, and not just a couple of them. But at a certain point,
if I turn it down, I can turn it down.
Yeah. So anyway, so you see him sitting behind his desk. He's on the phone, and the guy is eating his tie. Okay, he's literally eating it. And to the right, you'll see. Actually, he's sitting in between two flags. One is what I presume is the Georgian flag, and to the right of him is the flag of the European Union. And you know, guess what? Georgia is not in the European Union. They're not NATO either, but just look at this guy. And then there's
I see him eating his tie.
He's eating
that's
his
weird.
Tie. I mean,
I have to blog this.
And then there's
people out there who don't want to deal with my blog. They can go to Saakashvili eats his tie.
On YouTube. And there's a couple more clips of him. I'm sure you've seen the footage when he's outside, and then all of a sudden the plane comes overhead, and he goes running and like starts crying like a little baby, and they're covering him up, and you know, with all kinds of flak jackets. And just look at the guy's demeanor. Just look at him, and you're like, very suspect. And so, indeed, one of the stories that I picked up on from the Dutch alternative press is apparently this Saakashvili, which makes total sense, you know, if he's a tool of the Bush-Cheney clan, that, you know, he's a sex maniac and just, you know, insatiable appetite for sex. They've actually confronted his wife because she was in Holland for like 6 months, and they said, you know, well, is it true that your husband's a sex maniac? Which is kind of the most straightforward way forward way.
This is the Dutch press. The Dutch press did this, right?
Yeah, alternative press. And she said, no, that's not true. I'm glad you asked me to my face. I'm just here because, I have another child on the way, and I want the child to be born in a peaceful surroundings. But that is some of the word out there. But just when you look at the guy and you look at his demeanor, and you know, he just looks nuts.
So I asked with that in mind, I asked this woman who I was interrogating, Sabina's mom. I said she used to be a swimmer for the Russians or something.
She defected. One of those. Okay.
Well, not a I think they let him leave or something. I'm not sure, but anyway. I mentioned the sex thing to her, and she said, "Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me."
Yeah.
Well, but
it wasn't like a big revelation. Yeah. Do you ever read Pravda? The English version of Pravda?
Not often.
You might in these days because they got some really good art. The article you might like is Condoleezza Rice stupid? It's pretty funny. It really shows you how they're thinking.
Well, you know,
there.
She's supposed to be, that's the joke of this whole event. She's supposed to be the big Russian expert.
Oh, yeah, here it even says something about that. Here, every paragraph starts with, is Condoleezza Rice stupid? Here's another one. She claims to be a Russian expert, but her command of the language was recently exposed as being basic / elementary level on a Russian radio program, just as her grasp of what is going on in Russia today seems beneath the informed blogger level. That's in the Pravda. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, well, Pravda's become, it's not like a state institution anymore. It's become almost like a like the National Enquirer kind of thing. They have a lot of really funny stories.
And, you know, ever since I've been talking about this, I've been talking about it on the Daily Source Code as well. You know, basically, you know, the point being, look, Georgia started with, they had 3,000 U.S. security consultants on the ground before this happened, which, of course, is another word for mercenaries. You know, there are Georgians in U.S. combat fatigues. You know, all of this report is, it's all in the news. And there is some good reporting, but as usual, you know, the real overtones is just completely dominated by the talking points, which is, you know, Russia back off, Russia the aggressor. And that's being, you know, fed by Bush and, McCain, you know, just the way the media is writing the story.
And that, well, it's even funnier with Obama because he initially seems to have found the right, explanation. And then because it was so, you know, the blame Russia thing was pounded so hard in the press that Obama switched.
Right.
And seems to have gone to the other side. Now, if he has to switch back, he's going to talk about it, you know, a flip-flopper. I mean, it's going to be embarrassing. He doesn't know why. I mean, he just, I don't know why he just can't hold his ground.
Well,
I think,
of course,
he's got consultants.
His masters are telling him to do that.
Apparently. So anyway, so the story seems to be that we're not getting the story. That's the way I could.
Well, that's what I think is the most interesting at this point is, okay, here we have, and I'm, you know, if you haven't, I'm sure, you know, you can just please go to Dvorak.org/blog and take a look at this 12-year-old kid and her mom who were on Fox News.
Yeah, and, that was hilarious.
You know, and what just amazes me is to see how it actually works, you know, to see how we do know the actual truth. And at the end of the day, Russian, no real nice guys, right? I mean, you know, the Russians, the Chinese, the Americans, they're all thugs. They're all thugs running the show. So, you know, I'm not trying to say anyone's, you know, good. But in this case, we clearly know what happened. We clearly know it was U.S. and Israeli-backed aggression from Georgia. First blood, first fire, whatever. And that's being completely turned around, and Russia's being made to look like they started it all. And it's just amazing to me to watch that actually happen and see it, you know, it's already cemented, you know, it's already that, it's what happened. It's what it'll go down in history.
Yeah, it's a meme. So it reminds me of the, you know, if you poll the American public today, after all these years, you will still get the fact that, you know, Iraq are the ones who brought down the trade towers, you know, kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
So it's a hopeless situation. I mean, the Russians, for the propaganda artists that they once were, I suppose, I think they don't do a very good job of
manipulating the media.
Yeah, manipulating the media.
No, they're horrible at it, but they don't own it. That's the problem. If you own it, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, just look at Fox News, man. It's fantastic. It's fantastic to see when the minute something happens that isn't, you can almost hear someone in the control room go, pull the plug, pull the plug.
Well, they really blew it with that mom and her daughter because they couldn't, you know, because the daughter, you know, they had obviously had them on some sort of a track to say this and that. And then the daughter just interrupts and says, hey, before we go on, I want to thank Russia for saving my life.
which was scripted. I mean, you could tell that they, you know, it was like, here's what we're really going to do when we get on. You know, you could tell that was set up, but what a great setup.
Yeah, no, it was pretty funny.
I really enjoyed it.
And then the Fox guys are all nervous about it. Crack me up.
Yeah.
You know, Fox doesn't have to be quite so uptight with, you know, the countervailing opinions about anything. It's just, You know, they just they draw attention to themselves with some of this stuff.
Yeah, and my favorite is Fox and Friends. Have you ever watched that?
No.
Oh, you really should. That's where they kind of like, you know, it's like a morning news show. And they sit around, they drink coffee, and they laugh about the news. And the shit that comes out of their faces is just so incredible. Oh, how they dismiss stuff.
Well, you know, there was a report. Somebody had worked at Fox. I forgot what the story was. I'd have to think about it for a minute. But apparently there was some election someplace that the Republicans were losing. And apparently it brought the staff in the whole studio. Actually, they were visibly sobbing and crying.
What was that for?
Well, this is like apparently these guys are so caught up in the politics of it all that, I mean, the idea of fair and balanced is just a joke.
Hey, you know, I keep hearing more and more about...
Although I have to say the other side is just as bad.
Yeah, that, of course. What's the fairness doctrine?
Yeah, the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, man, I hear that more and more these days. I know it comes back around elections every single time, but I'm just hearing it a lot.
Yeah, it's not going to get anywhere. There's no way at this point. I mean, the Supreme Court would strike it down. I mean, it's ridiculous. And besides that, you know, but either side can take advantage of the situation as it now exists. It's just an anti-Rush Limbaugh thing is really what it amounts to.
Well,
they can't take it anymore.
I don't know if it's that, but you know, I hear it used more in the context of blogs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, actually, we blogged this. The FCC made an out-and-out comment that, you know, if the fairness doctrine is reinstalled, it may actually apply to the Internet.
Oh, please. Oh, my God.
I mean, you could probably go along, but you know what you'd end up with, I think, because of the bloggers being so subversive, generally speaking? You'd end up with boilerplate. So you'd make your comment, whether you're a right-wing blog or a left-wing blog, you'd make your, you know, anti-Bush or pro-Bush comment, and then you'd have a piece of boilerplate that you'd put at the end, which would give the opposite opinion.
Exactly.
And it would always be exactly the same.
We could write a script. It would just be exactly the opposite.
Yeah, you'd have, right, and whatever you said, then you'd have exactly the opposite. And you'd make it sound stupid. I mean, if you have a bunch of things to say that are, you know, well-reasoned, you could put in just the opposite and make it sound like a blithering idiot. But it's the opposite. This is not going to go anywhere.
Hey, speaking of Canada, did you hear somewhere that, where did I hear about this, that some... ISP or like big cable network, maybe. The CEO, God, I wish I had this story in front of me, said that looks like they were going to, you know, have like only a sanctioned website list that you could go to and be like approved portals that you could then jump off from, but you wouldn't be able to just get to any website anymore. Had you heard about this?
No. That won't fly.
Well, you wouldn't think it would, but it was kind of interesting. It's just one of those things that's floating out there.
It's probably done by one of these CEOs who's never been on the web.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't see how that could ever happen.
So anyway, so let's go back to our Georgia Russia thing.
Yeah.
And take it up a notch.
Okay.
Because you pointed this out to me. We had dinner the other night, which we'll talk about in a minute. But you pointed out to me, while all this was going on, strangeness was taking place in Africa that nobody paid any attention to.
And it's still, I even picked up the Financial Times at the airport and there was nothing in it. You know, Mauritania, there was a coup in Mauritania, which is, for those of you who don't know, is a large portion of West Africa. It's almost all of West Africa, actually. And I had never even heard of this before until I came across this little blurb. And the reason why it caught my eye is because the coup had actually taken place, but like 10 days ago now, which is almost simultaneous with what happened in Georgia. But they installed a former, European Union ambassador as either the prime minister or the temporary prime minister. It was a bloodless coup, so they say. The military took over. But what's interesting about Mauritania is that about 30% of China's oil comes from Mauritania. That's where they import it from. A large portion of their minerals comes from Mauritania. Even, I believe 20% of the U.S.'s imported oil comes from Mauritania.
And well, yet, no, that's not possible. Well, most of our oil comes from Alberta, Canada.
Let me see. Granted, it was a probably a Wikipedia article.
I think they could probably. No, I think what you're reading is that 20% of the oil produced by them may go to us, but that doesn't mean that's our. You know, it could be a 2%, 1% spit in the bucket for us.
Well, who knows? I mean, I'm not actually counting that shit. I'm not counting the barrels. Okay, so then of course I can also question. If the 30% was all of China's oil, or 30% of their oil went to China,
I think it's the other way. Yeah, so
it's not it's not unimportant. Let's put it that way.
Okay. No, China was linked in there. I was doing some research about this, and you discovered that most of this action took place just within the last year or so. That and you know the Chinese were doing more and more deals down there. The Chinese, of course, are all over Africa trying to get everything they can out of there, and then install like a lot of their own people. There's something that obviously broke the camel's back here that resulted in this bloodless coup, which took place coincidentally right during the
Georgia
thing, which makes me wonder who's in bed with who on these things, including us with the Russians, because you know it's possible that Putin and Bush actually do like each other,
and they just said let's just get rid of this asshole.
Yeah.
Hey, that coked out sex fiend. I'm tired of him.
It could be because the whole thing is a lot of saber rattling. You know, the U.S. Oh, there's the Russians. Da, 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 da. You well, know, I mean, it's possible that this guy that's running Georgia just got to go. And
so let me just say two things about Saakashvili. So the two things that are just really, really that just show some really weirdness there is the European Union flags everywhere. Although Georgia is not a member of the European Union, that's weird, okay? That's just fucking weird. And this whole George Bush Avenue and that picture you sent me of George Bush waving to you at the airport, I mean, come on, that's crazy.
Airport in Tbilisi.
Yeah, I mean, but there is an actual George Bush Avenue.
Yeah, it leads to the airport.
Okay, that's possible. But, you know, why did they have to go kill 2,000 or 3,000 people to get rid of this guy is beyond me.
Well, here's the other thing that's interesting. You should, I didn't realize this until I started. I found that photo, by the way, on Flickr. And if you go to look up Tbilisi on Flickr, there is a lot of photos taken from people in this area, and they've posted them on Flickr. There's hundreds and hundreds of them, and that's including some new modernization projects that they have going on that are just spectacular. But I'd recommend I started looking at these photos, and I'd like to visit this place. It looks like a photographer's dream come true, which is really photogenic.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. That is pretty amazing, isn't it? Wow. Mix of architecture.
Yeah, and then you can go on and on and on and keep clicking away, and you'll see more and more stuff you would just wish you were there taking photos, if you like taking photos. Meanwhile, there's one other thing that happened during this era.
Well, there's a couple things.
Well, the other thing that you may have not noticed is that Nigeria seems to be under some sort of guerrilla attack for its oil.
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
So it's still in a guerrilla attack phase. There's no puppet has been put in place yet.
Not yet. No. But there's a lot of action.
Well, the other thing
is I'm thinking why do they I'm thinking maybe it's a Nigerian scam, but I could come up with the right joke for this.
Yeah, I understand where you're going though. Dear George Bush, I would like to send you $5 billion. All I need is your bank account. Well, of course, Russia, the United States installed nuclear missiles, or at least made the agreement to install nuclear missiles in Poland. That was the other thing that really came together nicely.
Yeah.
In the same week.
Well, that would piss off the Russians.
Yeah, of course.
So you don't think it's a coincidence, though, that they made this announcement, even though they really haven't put any missiles in yet, after it was noted that Russia wants to get closer to Cuba.
Well, of course. No, I think it actually was the other way around. I heard that.
Oh, okay. That could be.
You know, this whole Poland thing has been going on for a while. And then the Russian general said, well, we might be considering Cuba. And now that
let's take it one step further. Perhaps our intelligence agencies discovered that they were going to do something with Cuba. So we preempted
possible.
The Poland thing.
Possible.
To keep, you know.
Okay, let me take it to the highest level, and then we got to get off it. Okay, here comes your Mulder moment. What's happening here is we want to get the Russians all riled up. Yeah, and we want to get the Chinese all riled up. That's why we're messing with them in Africa, because we actually want China to invade Russia. Come on. It makes so much sense. We want, you know, it's like, you want your minerals? Why don't you go get them in Russia? You want some oil? Go get it in Russia. Get out of here. Go make war with Russia, because Russia's angry anyway. If you strike on them, they'll fire on you. Think about it. It's not that crazy.
Well, you know, it's an interesting comment. I mean, there's always been a fear. I mean, when Nixon opened China up, there was apparently something going on in Mao's head about the, you know, fear of Russia. I mean, the Chinese and the Russians are right; they're on each other's border. I mean, it's like got to be like a moment of consideration for that.
Of course.
Okay, we'll let that slide at that one.
No, come on, I'm sticking with this one. I think it's.
I like it. No, I like it.
They want China and Russia to get. To get all pissed off. Where's Indonesia? Indonesia's got to be a part of this somehow.
They're in the middle of nowhere.
They're down in Southeast Asia.
They're down in the, you know, down with Singapore and those guys.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, dude, have you seen the pictures of Bush at the Olympics?
I saw him. I saw him on the TV a couple of times. But I haven't seen any photos.
Oh, the ones where he looks drunk.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. We blogged one of them.
Yeah. How about but you know, he has a big scrape on his right forearm. And of course, everyone's now saying, "Oop! Did he fall down? Did he, you know, hurt himself while hammered?"
I think this is the first time he's ever been to China. Or am I wrong?
I don't know.
You know, when he was a kid, he never left the country, even though his dad. I think I've told this story before, but might as well tell it again. And I got this on outstanding authority from a friend who was in school with him at Yale. His dad. Was ambassador to China. Now, you have to remember, George Bush, we made this guy president of the United States. The guy with the time he was elected president, he had never left the country except possibly to wander into Mexico for a taco.
And
so he never
tequila.
Went to France, he never went to Europe, he never went to Africa, South America,
he didn't even go to Jamaica.
And so, maybe. So anyway, so his dad was the ambassador to China.
Yeah.
And why you kind of poo-poo the whole thing, because you have people in foreign service in your background. But apparently his dad sent a note. They were going to have some big shindig in Beijing, you know, that the embassy was going to put on, and invited George and gave him a ticket to go to China to have to party, which seems like a logical thing for him to do.
Yeah.
And he refused to go because he didn't want to leave the country. I don't know.
I'm not poo-pooing that. What are you talking about poo-pooing?
Well, you told me that you get sick of these parties.
Oh, me? Yeah. Well, no, you mean it that way. Sure. But that's a good one. I'll corroborate that with Don. I think it was already in the Bush camp at the time.
So he didn't go to China when his dad was the ambassador there. Talk about it. I mean, the opportunity for fun.
Yeah. No, that's not his idea of fun.
No, apparently not.
He's a puppet.
So anyway... on to a different topic. So we had dinner. We have to do one of our rare restaurant reviews.
Yeah. Now, this was interesting because this is the first restaurant that I've been to that we actually entered the restaurant through a shopping mall. That was Bloomingdale's, no less. That was interesting.
Yeah, I found that it's an unusual place to have a restaurant, a fairly high-end restaurant. They have to go through a shopping mall to get there. Although I've seen other similar things. There's a couple of restaurants in Atlanta, Georgia that are positioned like this.
What was the name of it again?
Larkspur Steakhouse.
All right, yeah.
And it's a Bradley Ogden place. Anyone who's familiar with the chefs in the West Coast usually has heard of Bradley Ogden. And this is the only steakhouse that I know of. And he his place in Las Vegas for a while was the top rated restaurant. It was called Bradley Ogden's. But in San Francisco, he runs One Market, which is the place you were reminded of.
Right. That's right. One Market. Yeah, you're right. That's what it was. Yeah.
And he also, but his claim to fame is a thing called the Larkspur Inn, which is actually in Larkspur. And I've known the guy for a while. I've run into him a few times. He's a very interesting character because I think he's one of the guys, even though I didn't see any evidence of it at the steakhouse, generally speaking, his food has exaggerated flavors. And the only other guy that manages to pull this off is Booley in New York City, who, you know, had Booley's and then Booley Bakery, and I think he's running some other place.
What do you mean by exaggerated flavor exactly?
Well, it's like they do something. I think they cheat.
It's MSG. That's what it is.
For example, Booley, one time I was at one of his places, and he had this banana dish, and the banana flavor was so intense that there had to be some banana extract or some reduced bananas.
There was something going on,
and it was delicious. I'm not complaining, but Bradley manages to get these, so the flavors are low. They're heightened. They're more intense than they would normally be for whatever dish you're talking about. And one of the things I've always noticed with his cooking is, even though some of his presentations aren't absolutely, you know, French style spectacular, the food usually will out. If you had a bunch of different plates and he was doing the same dish as everyone else, his would taste better.
So let me give you a top line review, and then you can jump in. First of all, so placement, interesting. I really like the booths. I actually didn't even notice if the whole restaurant was that way, but I like the kind of 3x3 booths where you can, you know, if it's most comfortable if it's either just two or four people.
Right.
That was really good. The music was 3 decibels too loud, at least the sax. It was like, you know, very typical, almost Kenny G-like music. That was
I didn't like the music.
No, that was unfortunate. I very much appreciate our server saying, would you like regular ice water instead of forcing a bottle of some expensive shit on us?
Right. And everyone out there should know that amongst the foodies right now, tap water is in.
Ah, there you go. Especially if it's
so you always ask for tap water. Don't buy the bottled water. So there's a number of articles in the trades about this, about how what it's turned into a ripoff.
Wait, in the foodie trades?
Yeah.
Oh, what foodie trade would that be? Food and Driver?
Tasting Panel magazine for one.
Tasting Panel magazine. You have that, don't you? I bet you subscribe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, there's Food and Driver. Tasting Panel.
I'm just saying, if you read anything written by the insiders, they're going to talk about this. Thing is, it's cool. And I've noticed that everyone's just doing it naturally. It's almost like people are fed up with bottled water.
Well, they charge you $4.50. Why not? Of course we're fed up with it. That's stupid.
Right. You always go through two bottles. So it's $10 for nothing.
Exactly. So that was nice. Our server was a little overzealous. He came back a little too often, but that's okay. Let me see. We both had salad. I had the iceberg lettuce Waldorf dressing, which the chef is apparently quote famous for. It was that's what he said. Yeah,
I heard that.
Dressing. And you had actually something you didn't like. Your salad was not what you wanted.
Well, they had this. Blue cheese dressing on some other salad. I said, could I have that dressing on the regular cheap salad? You know, just the greens is what I usually get anyway. And so they said, oh, yeah, sure, no problem. So I tried this dressing. It was so ammoniated that I just said, you know, I can't eat this. It's just terrible. And so they took it back and gave me the salad in its more common form, which had the normal vinaigrette on it, right, which wasn't that great either. Mm. I've had better.
But mine was good, wasn't it? Because you had some of my salad. That was really good.
Yours was outstanding. That's what I would get if I went back.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was presented all right. It was presented nicely and still manageable. You could kind of cut through it and it wasn't like falling apart.
Right.
There was some thought went into that. And then we had, let's see, main course. I had the rib steak of the 8th rib, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, who knows?
And you had what'd you have?
I had the Hearst Ranch grass-fed New York strip.
Right. Actually, yeah, mine was actually, wasn't it the eel? The eel steak. Yeah, the eel steak ate the rib. That's what it was. Eel River.
Eel River.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Give me a break.
Yeah, whatever.
So, you know, there's still the best steak I've had is still in a place in Berkeley called Downtown.
I was going to say, you know, the steak was good, but it didn't blow me away.
No, it didn't blow me away either. I mean, I have better meat here. Yeah. So they didn't. I mean, it's not.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It was just like, it was like, okay, I've had steak before. This was good steak. And, you know, and I had the, their famous, horseradish, mixed in with a little bit of A1 steak sauce upon recommendation, which was a good recommendation, by the way. That's a good combo.
Yeah, you ordered A1 steak sauce. That cracked me up.
And he brought it out. He said, you should try and mix it with our famous horseradish. And I did.
Famous horseradish.
I did. And so I didn't pour it over the steak. I just, you know, I dipped it in a little bit. It was great. But the steak was, you know, and I had a couple pieces with nothing on it. And it was like, yeah, you know, it was a little bland, honestly. There was no taste enhancement there, like your banana story.
Right. Right, no, it's I felt the same way. I could have been a little more pumped up. I think they need to resource their beef.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just gonna say because you know, that eel river shit. You know, who cares?
They should just find some guy that's got the you know the good stuff out of Iowa, and screw it. You know, yeah. It's a steakhouse for God's sake.
Yeah. However, all of that was completely put right by your choice of wine.
Oh, yes. We had for people out there who like wine, we had a Camus, which, by the way, in the 70s, used to be pronounced Camus by the owner. But anyway, Camus, if you pronounce it that way, people think you're nuts. The Camus 2005 Cabernet, which was absolutely
it was outstanding.
Perfect.
Outstanding. Yeah. And they served it in very appropriate glasses. I really like the big, thin, walled glasses, just nice. You could really look at the wine, and that was good.
Now, so our discovery during the process, even though there's a lot of side dishes there, and they were all pretty decent, and we didn't complain.
Let's just say I had the corn, and I had the mashed potato, both fantastic. You had the chips or French fries, as you would call them, you American swine. That was it. You didn't have any other vegetables?
No, I ate off of your stuff.
Right. Okay.
So.
So that was all good, but then you're right, dessert.
The French fries were a little bland.
Yeah, same thing. It was how the corn was excellent.
Yeah, the corn was good. But the French fries were bland. They needed to be, I don't know what they could have done.
Salt. But put a little salt on it.
Salt.
Yeah. You were like, hey, can I have some ketchup? Give me some ketchup
They served it with a hollandaise sauce, which tasted more like a béarnaise to me. And it didn't really work.
No.
And I don't know why. It was too watery. It wouldn't stick to the French fries. So that was like not good. And then I wanted ketchup anyway. So they brought these little containers of ketchup, these little mini bowls with the ketchup in it. And the ketchup that they chose seemed to be a mediocre one.
Yeah, it wasn't no Heinz 57 label, man.
Well, whatever it was, I don't think it was homemade either.
No.
So anyway, but the big discovery we made,
yep.
I think,
yep.
at the end of the meal, you ordered some sorbets.
Yes, three flavors. And one was kind of peachy, I think. One was I don't remember. The third was the one that was the most spectacular.
Was cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe, yep.
And I had ordered some Calvados. Both of us had some old Calvados. And it turns out that a bite of the cantaloupe sorbet with a sip of the Calvados is unbelievably tasty.
We should put that shit in a bottle and sell it to teenagers, John. Add some sugar and we're done. No, it was unbelievably nice. That was really good. So we're calling
so that's
it the CNC, the cantaloupe and Calvados.
CNC.
Trying to find
so
some
check
CNC.
It out if anyone can get a hold of some cantaloupe sorbet, get some Calvados and see what you think.
My mouth is actually just watering thinking about it. That was
yeah. Nice. It was. I have to say, it was pretty spectacular. Meanwhile, good. You should mention that all the while, of course, at least at the beginning, before the meal began, you were fretting about the fact that your daughter.
Oh, yeah. So Christina, this was great. Around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we had dinner. Dinner was early, like 6:30, 7 o'clock. So at five, I get a text from my daughter, and at so five in the afternoon. By then, it was like 1 a.m. She texts me because I won this trip at a charity auction to Disneyland. It was, by the way, it was sponsored by Thomas Cook, which is a famous tour operator, certainly here in the UK. I think it's worldwide. And, you know, we had a lot of problems with this to start off with because, you know, we're never going to get to Disney. So Christina said, can I take my friends and we'll use the trip? I said, yeah, that's cool. So, you know, they call up and it was like in a nice gift bag. And so Christina called up and they said, well, you know, it's off season blackout dates. And I'm like, you know, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? That's stupid. What kind of gift is this? So, you know, and I'm just ranting about it. And then of course, Patricia, she was with me at the, and I spent some good money at this charity auction. You know, I was, and it was all she poo poo. You know, if it was a piece of shit and I would have known it was a piece of shit, then I wouldn't feel bad. But now I feel like, yeah, it was annoying. It was just annoying. So, Patricia gets into it and she calls him up. And so finally all this is arranged. And, so it works out interestingly. I'm in San Francisco. Patricia is in Holland. She's doing another, now she's doing Pop Stars. She's another jury gig judge for one of these reality shows. And so Christina was going to go off to Disneyland Paris with her friends. And so it turns out, you know, two of them couldn't make it or whatever. So it was just her and this other girl. By the way, two beautiful children of the sun, you know, just 17, 18-year-olds. Actually, 18, both 18 now, or Christina's almost 18. And, you know, so they decided, fuck Disney, let's go off to Paris. So they had done the Louvre and then all these, you know, grown-up girl things. And they were Gidget in Paris. And then they got on the train to go back. And then they wind up at 1 o'clock in the morning at the end of the line in Boissy-Saint-Léger, which if you look at a map, is kind of halfway between the center of Paris and Disneyland, only to the south. So it's like the province, and it's dark. And so I get a text message.
Fuck France, we
call
it.
Really. And I get a text message. Christina says, Daddy, I'm a little bit worried. And so I call her up and she's there and there's like, you know, guys yapping in French. It's like the conductor trying to tell her she needs to take a bus back to Paris because this is it. You know, everyone's asleep in this town. And so meanwhile, I'm zooming in on Google Earth, right? I can see the station. I can see where the bus station is. So it's almost like a matrix, you know, I'm like, okay, Neo, take the third door on the right, you know? So I'm like trying to help these kids find a taxi cab or anything. And then of course her phone dies. Her battery's dead. and she'd also called her mom. So her mom, you know, and it's like 1:30 in the morning now, and her mom's over there, and she's tired, and you know, and so she's freaking out because that's what moms do. You know, the umbilical cord is still virtually connected, and so Patricia's texting me, calling me. I'm trying to figure it out, and so then
About the other girl? Didn't she have a phone?
No, of course not. Her phone was charging back at the hotel. Strike two. And, so now it's like 2 a.m. and I don't know where they are. And I'm like, okay. And I'm getting ready to call some people that I know in France, you know, like, okay, I gotta figure this out because it's just worrisome. And, but then I call her back and all of a sudden she picks up because she, you know, met up with this kind of middle-aged couple, like 30s, I guess. And, she had put her SIM card in their phone. So that was kind of smart. But then I'm like, you know, all I want is I want to talk to these people. And I just want to say, could you please, you know, put them on, the right bus or whatever. And my daughter's saying, no, we're on the bus with them. We're going to Paris. And then from there, we're going to take a cab to Disney. So I'm like, oh, she's going back to, you know, Paris. It should be there at 3 a.m. Two girls. God knows how they're dressed. You know, I know what they look like. They're too beautiful to be walking around Paris at 3 a.m. And
it looked like a couple of hookers.
Thank you. Like transsexuals walking around. So, which by the way is a big thing in Paris on all the street corners of the Champs-Élysées even. So I'm like, let me talk to these people. And, you know, my French, low, mediocre. I mean, my French is worse than Condoleezza Rice's Russian. And this woman is just, I'm like, oh, okay. So then I'm at the office, right? I'm yelling, does anybody here speak French? And I forget who it was. One of our Russian guys says, I can try and get away with it. So we're like in a three-way, you know, and I'm like, could you please, when you get off the bus, take them to the hotel and make sure they get in a cab because, you know, I would really appreciate that. Anyway, so, you know, at a certain point, there was no more contact for about an hour or so. We're about to walk into the restaurant, and, you know, and you and I had agreed that, you know, this is going to be a great life experience, a great learning lesson for these kids. And, you know, they're 18, and yeah, I mean, the logical part of my brain is saying, yeah, absolutely. But of course, all the death scenarios and doom are running through the other part. And Patricia keeps calling and texting, and it's four in the morning, and she's, you know, she's just freaking out.
4 in the morning, Europe time, of course.
Europe time, yeah. And then as we sat down to dinner, and, you know, I was already like, man, this really is ruining the vibe for this dinner and everything. And then I get a text message from Christina. She says, we're back at the hotel. We're safe. So that enabled me to fully enjoy the bland meat.
Yeah. So there's a couple other things that came up in the conversation, which I wanted to go over. One is your experience with Virgin America and Virgin Atlantic. You went into a rant that I think needs to be reproduced for the public at large.
Well, this
you said that they wouldn't let you into the little lounge.
It's really more an issue, my personal issue with Virgin Atlantic. Ron and I took, this was early, it only just launched, we took Virgin America to New York, and actually we couldn't upgrade to first class, which was kind of a bummer at the time. I think I would rather travel JetBlue just for the seat spacing and the angle of bank that you get on your seat back. But that's not related to the story necessarily. But on the way back, we're flying from JFK out, you know, back to San Francisco. And they don't have a lounge for Virgin America. Yeah, you know, it's a budget airline, so that makes sense. And like, hey, you know, I've got like super duper gold card with diamond encrusted status at Virgin Atlantic. Let's go over to their lounge. So we go over to the lounge and say, you know, we're on Virgin America, so we just like to sit in the lounge. No, I'm sorry, you can't. So what do you mean I can't? Well, no, that's a separate company and it's not tied into us. And by the way, the miles are also not combined as far as I know yet either. The rewards program. And I could huff and puff all I wanted, but they would not let me sit there if I wasn't flying on Virgin Atlantic.
You know what? I was thinking about this.
It's totally,
yeah,
by the way,
you were mad about it because
Virgin Atlantic.
So much.
Well, Virgin Atlantic is at fault there, I feel.
Yeah, but here's what I'm thinking. There is a protectionist thing that goes on that doesn't allow international carriers to carry domestic travel in the U.S. In other words, Singapore could.
Oh, no,
come
no, no,
over
no,
from,
that, that's
no, wait,
totally,
let me finish.
But that's totally
no,
why it was
that,
done.
No, let me finish.
Okay.
Singapore, for example, can't, you know, even though they might stop in San Francisco and then go on to New York from Singapore, from Hong Kong, they can't pick anybody up in San Francisco and take them to New York, which I think is idiotic, but that's the way it is because of the way we have restrictive laws. You know, so our free market, our fantastic free market where there's no regulation, apparently isn't that free. I think that they probably have some sort of a memo that we have to keep these two companies so separate.
Yes.
That no matter that if you even mention Virgin, you probably could have gotten into that lounge if you had never said
said Virgin America, yeah. Well, so you may recall that Virgin America had a tough time launching, and they literally had planes sitting in the desert for, I think, about a year. And it was exactly that reason. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger pulled the trigger on some law that allowed them to operate. So I think there's even a law that you can't operate as a foreign owner of a foreign airline. You can't operate a domestic U.S. airline. And I think they split it up into two companies for that very reason. Then Schwarzenegger changed some law or approved something that essentially let them operate. But you're absolutely right. There's no carry-on. And that's part of the Open Skies Agreement. There's all kinds of shady stuff that, well, shady, I wouldn't say that, maybe shady, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They probably can't even talk about each other.
Yeah, which is a joke. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, I've flown Virgin America a couple of times now to Seattle, and it's 10 times better than anything else right now to go back and forth.
I don't like, but I like JetBlue better. Does JetBlue fly up to Seattle?
No, not from here. They fly. I think they fly to Seattle from Long Beach or something like that. Right, but you have to fly to Long Beach and then fly up. That's stupid. There's no direct flight. But no, JetBlue I like a lot too. But there's something about the. You know, they do these auctions at the end of the day. If there's any first class seats, they'll sell them for nothing. Mm-hmm. So I upgrade for $50 to first class, and I get like a 5-course meal. I mean, they really. It's like I've never had so much food on such a short flight. Except on a foreign carrier. Like one time I flew from Taiwan to, I think it was an hour flight from Taiwan to someplace like, I don't know, it was Taiwan to Hong Kong or something, or Japan, not sure. But anyway, it was like an hour. But meanwhile, they served like a 20-course meal. It was unbelievable.
Well, when I actually arrived, part of the story I didn't tell when I arrived last Sunday is my bag didn't show up with me. And it was going to come on the flight the next day. And I was pissed off. Like, you know, this is a very expensive. In fact, it's the price of my ticket has gone up another 20 or 25% since I last flew. So that's only in 4 or 5 months time. You know, I'm like, you know, and I said, what do you do for people who paid this amount of money and their bag doesn't show up? What, you know, what do you do about that? Well, this woman at the bag counter, she obviously wasn't, there's nothing she could do, so I just let it go.
Can you preface this? Did the flight leave early, or did you check in late? Is that why the bag was delayed?
No, in fact, because, you know, Virgin picks you up, so, you know, it's all door-to-door service, so everything's taken care of, and they take your bag, they do all the checking in, everything. The flight was actually even delayed by 2 hours, which is probably the reason, because it was probably sitting around somewhere and then, you know, got mixed up. I mean, shit happens. Unfortunate, but you know, I do know that with British Airways, they immediately come out with all kinds of compensation. And I'm just thinking, you know, I'm thinking 3 days Necker Island. I'm like, okay, Branson, I'm going to get you for this sucker. So I fire off an email to my personal travel assistants at Virgin, the PAMS, personal advanced travel management system, whatever the hell it is. And I say the same thing. It's like, you know, here's what happened. You know, what do you guys do for this? Well, I'm so sorry. We're sending it off to Richard Branson's executive assistant. And when I got home, there was indeed a letter from Richard Branson's office that said, we're so sorry. And by the way, they totally knew, because from the minute I set foot in the airport, they were all over me. You know how if your gold card on some of these international flights, then the flight services director, so basically the chief steward or stewardess will, who runs all the cabin personnel, they'll come up and they'll say, hey, how are you doing, Mr. Curry? And, you know, they'll give a little personal touch to it, right? And, so the flight services director sits down and, you know, is there anything we can do for you, Mr. Curry? And out of my mouth comes, some pole dancers, perhaps? And without blinking, she says, I'll have Naomi come over in a minute. I swear to God. And Naomi was a very cute stewardess. But I was like,
did she give you a pole dance?
No. But I just thought it was so funny. I was like, okay, send Naomi over. So anyway, so give me 10,000 miles and I think 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Not bad.
That's better than poking the eye with a sharp stick.
Yeah, but I just wanted someone to apologize. Just, you know, come on. A lot of money goes into that company.
Well, now to finish the story, you told me that the bag was maybe not going to be shipped to you.
Oh, yeah. So then they wanted me to come to the airport because there were some issues with they didn't really want to put my bag on the aircraft unaccompanied because it was, quote, filled with equipment and wires. I said, yeah, I can tell you exactly what it is, each item. I know, well, do you have a carnet for that, which is like an international document of, you know, like a customs thing. I said, no, it's just, you know, just some shit that I use, you know. It's like I'm a podcaster. Leave me alone.
You know, I remember back in the 70s, showing my age, of course, but when you traveled, even with a camera.
Yeah, you had to have customs forms for it.
You had to have a form for it because if you took the camera out of the country and took it back in, they don't know if you're going to sell it over there or if you bought it new and you bought it and you're trying to get it in without paying duty. And there was this big, so you had to go with a bunch of documentation to fly around. If that was still in play today with all the crap that people carry around, the iPods and the laptops and the this and the that, you'd be walking around with a binder full of stuff.
Well, back when, let's see. This is probably, maybe 18 years ago. I remember, maybe even a little bit longer. I remember leaving the Netherlands, and I had my watch on. It was still new and shiny then. And they said, here's this form. I said, what's that for? Well, you need to write down your watch and declare it, because it has to come back into the country. And when you come back to the country, they'll certainly want to try and charge you import duty on it. Like, it's on my fucking wrist. Yeah, but it looks new.
Well, and there was a lot of smuggling going on. People, women would go, there's always the story, but, they go to Europe and buy a fur coat and a bunch of diamonds, and they waltz through customs on the way back as though it's their, that they walked out with it.
So here's my question. With all of that, tightness on smuggling, with all of the, look at what I'm going through at the border. Look at all the border security and war on terror, homeland security, protectionism. How is it possible that all these drugs from Afghanistan and places of this nature makes it into the West, into Europe, into England, into the United States, and it's cheap?
By the ton.
By the tons. How does that work?
I always get the kick out of somebody who always discovers a 5 tons of some drug. And you're thinking, that's obviously must be a spit in the bucket, because it doesn't affect the prices on the street. The stuff's still coming in.
No, here in the UK, all the nasty shit, like cocaine and heroin, is cheaper than marijuana. Yeah. It makes you wonder what the Brits are doing there in Afghanistan.
Obviously, they're setting up conduits to move tons of drugs. Well, you can't bring your watch in.
Well, but this is that whole Iran-Contra thing. That's exactly what this was about. It's like they'd send the dope back. The dope would be sold. The dope would then be, used to buy weapons, and the weapons would go back. It seems like a perfect scam.
Well, it's a gray market.
Very gray. Which I think brings us to my favorite topic. Now, wait a minute. I got something else. This is great. The Spanish government all came back for an emergency meeting yesterday because the economy is collapsing.
It is?
Yep.
The economy of Spain is collapsing?
Yes. This is an article. Well, Spain was in this huge overdevelopment mode of new buildings, basically, second homes for a lot of Europeans. And, there's just, so much money, and all the big building firms, all these gangster guys, they're all there in Marbella, and they're all hanging out. And, so Zapatero, Zapatero is the Spanish prime minister, had his entire cabinet come back yesterday from vacation. He came back from vacation as well.
Well, there's story after story here. Spanish government cuts short holiday as economy collapses.
There you go.
Socialist Spain's economic collapse, blogist. Global economic collapse begins. First one to pop is Spain.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to happen all over Europe.
Oh, well, that'll bring the dollar back up to snuff.
Well, that's it. I read an interesting theory on that. The theory is that that this is actually it's a scam. Yeah, it's gonna the dollar.
You think it's a scam? It is a scam. Everything well, of course is. That's it's what a we. Scam. That's all we. That's the theme of our show.
It's a scam. Gitmo Nation. It's a scam. Come on, Georgie. Yes, you can. Let's see if I can find that. I saw some. It was a really good article about it, really showing in depth how, the problem is the U.S. is now, and I don't have proof of this, but is starting to default on some of these loans, like the $9 trillion or so that we have. And it's all about pegging the external currencies once, cause this is about the pegging. I don't really understand it, honestly. But it's about the all these other currencies being pegged to the dollar, but that it's gonna. But yes, in the short term, dollar up, absolutely.
Good. So I'm looking here at an article from March 9th, 2008, where there's Spain goes to polls. This is some a while ago. Spain goes to polls in shadow of financial woes and terror threats. So this has started. This started a while back, I guess, yeah. And is now coming to a head. It's all based on these, on buildings. You're right.
And I also didn't notice it kind of happened this week while I was in the States. The pound just took a beating against the dollar. I mean, we're talking massive, like 15 cents or something.
About time.
Yeah, I agree. Being paid in dollars, I totally agree. I think it's we're way overdue for that correction.
Yeah, well, get back to $1.50, what it is really what it traditionally has been over the eons. Although it's, approached a one-to-one thing a couple of times, never quite made it, at least in my lifetime. But,
I don't know, sir, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean, the dollar to pound ratio traditionally is about a buck and a half for a pound.
Yeah, it's usually been about that, yeah.
But at one time, I think it was in the 70s, or no, maybe it wasn't the 70s, it must have been the 80s. I'm not sure. But it was going, so I think it was like a buck 25 or got that low, and I'm thinking, wow, this thing could go to a one-to-one. That'd be kind of cool, but that was the end of that. Right. So anyway, it looks like it is the construction industry that's triggered this whole thing, which is interesting, and say the least. With a glut of, this is back in March again, with a glut of around 500,000 new flats nationwide.
Yeah.
And a credit squeeze, sales have dropped 50%.
But it's always the building industries. And in Europe, all these builders, they're all in cartels. Once in a while they get slapped on the wrist, but they're all really heavily tied into government because all development, of course, is approved by government. It's all connected to each other. So, when that shit unravels, that's going to be really messy.
This is interesting. Let me read this one, too. This is the same article. But Francisco Hernando Village, a mammoth development of 13,000 flats beside the motorway 20 miles south of Madrid, is the most dramatic example of the worry that looms largest with the voters. As you approach this gleaming new town outside Cesena, you glimpse sky through unglazed windows. Blocks remain unfinished. Cranes soar into the brazen sky, and because now they're getting carried away with the writing. And close up, there's silence. There's no roaring building site, but a ghost town chilled by winds that whip the bleak Castilian plain. Who's out writing this thing?
We can just hear the winds.
Elizabeth Nash. Yeah. She wants to be a novelist, I guess.
Oh, man. This is a fun one. Last week, I mentioned something that you said was getting no ink. Now, of course, the John Edwards story is everywhere.
Right.
But there is an interesting little link to this, which I just found out when I got back this afternoon, that Fred Barron, who is the, I guess either was or is, I guess was Edwards' finance director. He's a lawyer, a prominent Texas lawyer. Now, of course, this kind of fits into the blogosphere where, Robert Scoble had a picture of, because he was on the plane, on the campaign plane, when a couple of bloggers were invited to go along with Edwards. And Scoble had a picture of Edwards and this girlfriend of his. And so that.
Oh, really? Oh. Well, yeah. Scoble takes pictures of everything.
Right. So, I mean, eventually Scoble's going to have a picture of everything. Exactly. But also on the plane was Rocket Boom, and now all these things click together. Now I know where this guy is such an arrogant little prick. That's Andrew Barron, who was Fred Barron's son. So now all of a sudden it puts Rocket Boom in a very different perspective. And very interesting.
Did they just get bought by somebody?
No, they sold the, quote, distribution rights to Sony. But what's interesting is that Fred Barron, he's invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in Rocket Boom, up to $800,000. And so essentially, by letting Rocket Boom come on the plane, there's all kinds of conflicts of interest there. It's helping a business interest of his getting more exposure. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff there that's a little fishy. I just thought it was very interesting because I always wondered, how the hell they do it? Like, where are they getting their money from? Who's paying for all that? They can't all be working for free.
Yeah, well, apparently I don't know. Actually, Andrew's never, I've always kind of I've never disliked the guy. But I don't know how he makes any money either. I've always been baffled by it.
Well, he doesn't. His dad pays for it.
Yeah, well,
that's how it works. And that's okay. He's just the...
It's a model.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
So what's your business model?
My dad pays for it. My dad pays for it. Oh, funny. Looks like this was another good one that I picked up. This is from the New York Times. Growing doubts from scientists about the strength of the government's case against the late Bruce E. Ivins, the military researcher named as the anthrax killer, are forcing the Justice Department to begin disclosing more fully the scientific evidence it used to implicate him. And I'll just remind you that they used new scientific methods. Don't you remember that? It was like they had some new way to trace back these spores to this flask.
Yeah, to the one flask that he had, the only one that had total control over the flask, no matter that he was working for other people, but he had the total control, and that must be it, and that's why he committed suicide somehow.
So,
he committed suicide by eating
Tylenol.
Too much Tylenol.
Well, and actually, we were talking about that because we had a discussion about paracetamol. A lot of people said, hey, you know, it's paracetamol, if you take too much of it, you actually, you know, you can get, your liver can fail and you can die. And and then we're thinking, well, wait a minute, that's what's in Tylenol. So if he took massive quantities of Tylenol, which could actually be deadly, it would probably take a couple of days.
Yeah, I don't think it kills you very quickly. But the thing is that that's what I think we brought this up too at the dinner, which was that it's become like, and I hate to use the word overuse the word meme, but the idea that you would go to a counter and buy two bottles, and then the cash register would say, no, you can't buy this much, out of the blue, because that's never happened before, maybe just a way of getting it into the public's consciousness that this stuff is toxic, so no one's going to question this crazy suicide.
It could be.
Which may have not been a suicide at all.
But, you know, I've gotten a lot of email from people saying that you really don't want to OD on paracetamol.
Right, or Tylenol. In fact, you don't want to use Tylenol if you drink alcohol.
You don't really need that at all. In fact, often the reason your headache goes away when you have an aspirin is because you're drinking water. Seriously.
It's probably some truth to that.
Yeah. So it looks like they're going to have to come out with they have to back up all of their so-called evidence this week. So that's good. I'll be looking out for that. That's kind of cool. I got to talk about Clinton.
Oh, I was hoping we just forget about it.
No. Because I have another piece to the puzzle. I've got another piece. It's all happening. It's unfolding. Okay. So amidst all the shit we just talked about for the past hour.
Well, can I throw a premise in just to add spice before you begin?
Adam is nuts? Was that the premise?
No, I think this was all triggered by the fact that we are both of us slightly suspicious of Hillary's intentions at the convention.
Yes, in more ways than one, and that, of course, started with her not canceling her campaign, but a suspension of her campaign. I've never forgotten that. So this guy, the leader of the Democratic Party in Arkansas, I'm sorry, I'm just saying this guy, that's kind of disrespectful because he's dead, Bill Guatney, chairman of the Arkansas Democratic Party and personal friend of the Clintons, was murdered last Wednesday. It was one of those crazy murders. And so I started, I can't remember exactly why, but I'm sure something flashed somewhere on a website and I'm like, Clinton body count. Hey, that's interesting. So I start looking at how many people who are friends, acquaintances, or business partners of the Clintons have wound up dead. Holy crap. I mean, this list is, what do you think, John? 50 people maybe?
Yeah, and that's probably, I'm sure there's others that we don't know about.
I mean, I'm talking his personal bodyguards, his envoys. Of course, we all know about the Whitewater affair, and it's all either suicide or
Vince Foster.
Foster, that's right. And it's all either a suicide, but it's all death by gunshot. You mean no Tylenol involved? You know, shot in the face, and then this whole Mina which was, you know, goes back to our drug smuggling things. Just, I mean, and there's actually, I put this, it's a documentary, which is, did you watch that documentary I sent you the link to?
No, not yet.
It's well done, man. This thing is a couple of years old, but it's really well done. And it goes through all of the Clintons' background, but it really accelerates when it gets to the list of dead people. It's just, it's crazy. And then we were at dinner or maybe we were still at the office. I'm like, you know, was this guy a super delegate? Well, yes, lo and behold, he was.
Actually, we were at lunch at Fringall in San Francisco,
right.
And then you were telling me this story, and I'm thinking, oh, this is Adam going off the deep end again. I said, well, is the guy a superdelegate? You brought out your phone, you started looking it up by Googling superdelegate and the guy's name. It turns out he was.
He was a superdelegate, right. So now I'm thinking, well, you know, this is kind of interesting. Let's start to put all of these pieces of the puzzle together. So simultaneously in this week, the Obama camp, or the DNC, I guess, concedes that there will be a roll call vote at the convention. Now, the way I understand that, you know, they're saying it's a way to involve Hillary, or maybe it's a way to get her in the vice presidential slot. But the way I understand a roll call vote at the convention is they're actually going to count the votes. Instead of just saying Obama's the man, they're going to do a ceremonious reading of the votes. Is that the way you understand that,
yeah,
John?
No, they would go California. Right. California cast 45 votes for blah, blah, blah. Can 45 votes for the next president of the United States.
Right,
you know,
right.
That kind of thing.
So in my mind, in my Mulder theorist, my CT mode, as we have another abbreviation, conspiracy theorist is now CT mode. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Maybe they've been... Because, you know, the superdelegates basically, for those of you who don't know, and I've learned from John that this is, you know, only something that happens with the Democratic Party. You have these superdelegates, and regardless of what is decided in a caucus, the superdelegate is the one who actually calls the shots. Is that...
Yeah, no, you can, for example, there, we're out here in California, where I think Hillary won the state. There was a couple superdelegates in Marin County. Says, I don't care. Actually, I think they were going to vote for Hillary. The superdelegate who was a representative of the state government, she says, I don't care how the vote goes. I'm voting for blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I think she's going to vote for Hillary no matter what. I don't care what they vote. We're voting for this.
So I immediately say, well, this is a message. This is the message to all the superdelegates. Because this guy, in some reports I found, this Bill Guatney, when Hillary started to wane or when she had suspended, you know, the timing of that is not entirely clear, but then he switched over to Obama, which of course is towing the party line. But for me, you know, in my CT mode, I'm like, this is a total message to these superdelegates that, you know, now we're going to have a roll call vote. And, you know, you better be voting for Hillary. Her campaign is suspended. She could still, maybe she actually believes that it could happen. Now, here's what I find today. Now, this is what blew me away. Lady de Rothschild. Rothschild, of course, one of the families that are the true owners of our earth, along with they own our earth. Now she's
American.
They
make good wine, so I don't care.
Yes, okay. And the Rockefellers make good plazas. So she's on Fox News, and she's plugging this thing togetherforus.com. That's together4us.com. I don't have to tell you what she was saying on Fox News, because basically right here on the homepage it says, we stand together with Hillary's 18 million voters in pursuit all of the following. Bring us together by honoring Hillary Clinton and her supporters at the Democratic National Convention in Denver by A, placing her name into nomination following traditional protocol, B, ensuring a roll call vote, and C, inviting her to speak during prime time on August 26th, the 88th anniversary of women's suffrage. And there's a whole bunch of other ones. And I'm like, dude, they're totally going to pull it off. She is going to win the nomination by intimidation and by the huge power. So the intimidation of bullets and the huge power that the Rothschilds wield, who obviously got this roll call vote implemented. I don't know how that works, but that, I guess that can also only be total intimidation. I'm telling you that the Clintons are not done.
Well, I'm not going to argue that they're not done, but, you know, the thing is that came up with this guy getting murdered in Arkansas, mm-hmm. was the fact that the way it would have to have played out is that he was a superdelegate, and then he decided, and he was with Hillary, and then he's changed his vote to Obama. They must have gone to him and said, look, when the thing comes up for the roll call vote, we're going to have that happen.
You're going to have to say Hillary.
Pick Hillary, and the guy says, no, I'm not going to do that. I already said I'm picking Obama. Boom, dead.
Boom, dead. Exactly. That's the message, though. That's the message. Because everyone knows it. Everyone who switched is now going to say, oh, crap, I better be saying Hillary, and they're all getting that phone call as we speak. You know what, John? This is scary. You're not pushing back.
I'm not totally unconvinced. Well, I know for a fact that they're sneaky, these two. And it seems to me that would be an interesting kind of a thing to try to pull off. To actually get the nomination, because the fact of the matter is Hillary still sees herself as the true winner because she has the most popular vote.
Yeah, the popular
vote.
She
won the votes. You know, Obama won most of his stuff on the caucuses, the one-on-ones. He kind of snuck his way in. If they can find one scandalous thing, I think the next couple of weeks is the telling, or next week, I guess, would be the end of it.
Isn't it Wednesday? Isn't it this coming Wednesday, or is it next Wednesday?
I think it's a Wednesday after. Well, anyways, I think it's the last week of the month.
So this is the week where we're going to have Obama in all kinds of compromising situations. They should probably really hit hard on Michelle. I think you're right. I think it's all going to happen this week. It's just going to be one after another.
Yeah, it's going to have to be orchestrated so it looks as though the Republicans are doing it. So Hillary can go, I don't know. Oh, whoa, that's terrible that they would do this. But I guess we're going to have to pick me. So they're going to have to.
Well, it's so understandable, the events and the news that has surfaced in the past week, that the superdelegates have clearly seen the error of their ways, and they have chosen me as the perfect person to lead this party and to lead the new America. How was that?
And, you know, and her argument could be, which is all American, it's not over till it's over.
That's right. And that's why she suspended her campaign. I mean, it makes so much. And you know what? I thought those Clintons went away way too easy. I really did. And when you see this, if you have a chance, watch this documentary. I'd say it is as good as any 9/11 video you've ever seen. It's that enthralling. It is totally exciting. You just sit there, you go like, oh my God, you know, this Bill Clinton all he does is snort coke all day and go after chicks. And, you know, and it's not like just like, you know, news footage with a voiceover. I mean, there's interviews, there's troopers, you know, Texas Rangers, and there's all kinds of people, on the record, you know, saying these things.
You got to send me a link and I'll blog it.
It's on curry.com. It's right there on the homepage.
Okay.
You can't miss it. You don't have to do a /blog. Just do curry.com. Real easy to remember.
Yeah. Bubba will pick it up and put it in the show notes.
Oh, wait a minute. Bubba had stuff for us to look at, didn't he? Oh, you know what? Actually, I have a follow up on something. Here we go. And actually, it fits in perfectly with right now.
Hi, guys. Just finished listening to No Agenda 42, and there was something about Obama being booed. I think that the clip you saw was out of context. What had happened there was there were some hecklers, and they were African-Americans. They say, Obama, you don't support African-Americans enough. And the crowd was booing the hecklers. And Obama was saying, no, let's be civil, let's pull this back together. And he actually did a question and answer period with them for a couple minutes, and they ended up just sitting down and being quiet. So the boos weren't so much for Obama. They were actually directed at the people heckling Obama, and Obama handled that heckling situation very well. This is Eric from Portland signing off. Goodbye, guys.
Well, there you go. Exactly as we thought it.
Yep. So, now Bubba had the thing about the land bridge. You thought the Romans walked to England, even though that bridge was, you know, 100,000 years ago.
Okay, so who was it? It wasn't the Romans. But there was land there, wasn't there?
Yeah, 100,000 years ago.
That's what I meant, 100,000 years ago.
Well, the Romans were there a couple thousand years ago, so it's... You got your time frame.
I already said I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
That's true. It's one of our themes.
We don't know anything about nothing.
We don't know nothing about nothing.
About nothing about anything.
Don't shoot us.
Please. Okay. Let me see. Anyway, so, yeah, take a look at that documentary. It'll just blow you away.
Yeah, I will. I've seen these things before. I mean,
this one I haven't seen. I've never been interested, honestly. You know, I never really thought about it, but it, you know, do you take this and I remember all these individual things happening. I even went back and looked at some Waco stuff, which is also, there's some connections to Clinton there. And that
you mentioned this. Apparently, a couple of his bodyguards were killed in this action or something. What was that all about?
Four of his bodyguards were killed at Waco, Texas. And of course, Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, her White House secretary, whatever, later took a box from, the Waco files, and there was some Whitewater stuff. I mean, it's just so many connections, so many ties. But the fact that four of Bill Clinton's former security detail were killed at Waco was just interesting.
Hmm.
But my point is, how that kind of passed me by in, kind of wide awake and dreamland. And now to see how it actually works with this Georgian thing is just fascinating, and it's amazing. The only, and people say to me all the time, well, what do we do? How do we stop the insanity? And just try to help people become aware. And the internet's really good about it because, everything is written about.
Stop the insanity.
No, but all this stuff, the truth really, or good journalism is being performed. It's just because there's so much that you're hammered with over and over and over again by most corporate media, that it never really becomes the meme, as you would call it, John. It just kind of stays out there. And so once you start to aggregate all the pieces, it's really interesting. Like the Saakashvili guy. I mean, there's a nutcase eating his tie, and sitting in front of EU flags, driving down George Bush Avenue. I mean, when you start to put all that together, it's like, okay. And that's really what's kind of cool. Like, I'm digging that.
Yeah. Well, that's the public service that we provide with the show No Agenda.
Yeah. Hell yeah. All right, you must have something. Nothing left.
No,
on
I'm
list?
Done. I mean, I just wanted to talk about the debriefing I got from the mom from Georgia.
Yeah. Now, all of that stuff about Georgia is so blatantly clear. I didn't even bring up my my Tom Clancy game thing. You kind of poo-pooed that when I showed it to you, so I'm a little afraid.
Well, it's interesting. I was just skeptical, and but yeah, Clancy apparently had predicted this in some game.
Ghost Recon is what it's called. It's a video game, apparently very very popular one. They even have a Ghost Recon 2. But the trailer was pointed out to me. These things are of such high budget and such quality. They do trailers and get kids really hyped up and excited about it. It's a big deal when something new comes out. But I don't really follow the shoot 'em up death games. And I think I blogged this as well. I can actually let you hear it. So the setting of this video game is in Georgia. Russia has the ultra nationalist, as they call them, the ultra nationalist is building up forces. It's 2008. By the way, the trailer is from 2002. Just listen to it. Oh, you'd be even better. Here we go. It's only a couple. It's only like a minute.
The year
15.
Is 2008, and the world teeters on the brink of war. Radical ultra-nationalists have seized power in Moscow. Their goal, the reestablishment of the old Soviet Empire. Ukraine, Belarus, Kazakhstan. One by one, the nearby independent republics slip back into the Russian orbit. Russian tanks sit in the Caucasus Mountains and the Baltic Forests, poised to strike to the south and east. The world holds its breath and waits. For one small group of elite soldiers, the war has already begun. U.S. Special Forces Group 5, 1st Battalion, D Company. Deployed on peacekeeping duty to the Republic of Georgia in the Caucasus.
That's kind of what I wanted to... I don't know if you could hear that at all, but anyway...
Yeah, I could. Of course, they just have to swap out the Special Forces for Blackwater, which, by the way, would be a great name for a game.
Blackwater? I'm sure they have it, or they're going to make it.
So around the office, by the way, around San Francisco, there's these little posters that have been stapled all over the place for a protest that I think is going to take place next week, unless it took place already, around the Ubisoft, which is in the area around South Park, San Francisco.
That's the company that makes Ghost Recon is Ubisoft.
Yeah, well, Ubisoft also has a game they make for the army that you can download. Uh-huh. And the protesters are saying that the idea of this game is to get 12 and 13 year old kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, 12 and 13 year old kids, because the game is free. You can download it from the army. I was talking to my son about it. The game is free, and apparently, you know, it reminds me a little bit like The Last Starfighter, which is a movie where, you know, some kid's playing a video game, and it turns out that the game is a training vehicle for interstellar war. And, once you beat the game, you're solicited to join the forces. I just thought it was kind of interesting.
Well,
maybe Ubisoft is a front for somebody. I don't know.
Well, you know, so if you go look at all these ties, I mean, I haven't looked at Ubisoft, but okay, so this is very interesting that indeed the exact thing that happened, U.S. Special Delta Forces, call them security consultants, if you will. They're in there in Georgia. They attack. It literally says Ossetia in the Caucasus. I mean, the whole thing is there. It even says 2008. Now, look at Tom Clancy's connections. Have you ever looked at who he's related to?
Well, I always thought he was a shoe salesman.
Oh, man. Oh, you're going to love this. He is... I'm just looking it up because I looked it up the other day.
But while you're looking that up, by the way, anyone out there wants to go, you go to truesoldiergame.com and you can find the download and information about this army game. It's called True Soldiers Game. Plural. truesoldiergame.com.
I'm still looking for this. I think his wife's father is like a bigwig at the Organization for Economic Development, you know, the OECD or whatever that horrible.
Oh yeah, right.
I think, you know, that's it's like
OED, I think.
No, it's like OECD.
Well, maybe.
But, you know, there's interesting ties there. Oh, let's see. Oh, this, when you if you do Tom Clancy OECD, you get a lot of good Google hits. Anyway,
French businessman joins Ubisoft board. French businessman joins Ubisoft board. Outgoing director Yvette Guillemot makes way for incoming Mark Fiorentino, a specialist in business markets and banking. So Ubisoft is a French game publisher, even though they're in
South Park. Are they public?
I'm not seeing that they are yet. Don't know. We'll look into it. See who's on their board.
Could be an interesting tie. But so when is this this demonstration? Is it a demonstration or what is it?
Well, I guess it was over maybe. Let's see, I'm looking at this.
Shit, man, we could have been keynote speakers.
You could have. Anti-war group protests Ubisoft and America's Army, which is the game. Anti-war group targets. Let's see if there's anything going on here. You can find it. Just type in Ubisoft Army and you get...
It warrants some further investigation.
Yeah, we'll look into it.
Wow, you haven't called me crackpot once so far, John. The show doesn't feel like it's over yet.
You haven't gone... The Clinton thing was the closest you came.
Clinton, there's a lot there, man.
Oh, and by the way, for people out there listening to us, eavesdropping, I probably didn't call him a crackpot today because after having dinner with him, I realized what he's actually... This is mild. You have no idea.
Yeah. Well, that thing that we talked about at dinner, I think it's happening next Saturday. So let that be a tease for some cool nutter theory coming up.
Yeah, it'll definitely be nutter.
All right. So, can't wait to see what happens in this week as everything unfolds. I think we've given you, you listeners out there, some good info. And by the way, if you enjoy listening to this show, tell a friend.
Hey, that's funny, because I was going to suggest the same thing. People should make one other person listen to this show.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we've done no marketing for this show. We've got, you know, something like 30,000 listeners or 40 maybe, but we need 100. So let's get some people to listen because it's a good show. It's entertaining.
Yeah, I mean it's a good yin to the yang that's out there. If that makes any sense.
Not really, but yeah.
And remember, we are all united under Gitmo Nation. Coming to you from the United Kingdom, I'm Adam Curry.
And in Northern California, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again next week, right here on No Agenda.